guys. Welcome to episode number 4 of the Mitch and Nils Bull Show. My name is Mitch. My man to my left is Jay Nils. What up, Nils?
Yo, no. You only Nils once. That's the motto.
All right. We are back. Episode number 4. Really excited you guys can join us. And big news. We are on iTunes now. We're super excited about that.
We are official. We made it to the big time, huh?
Yeah. So you can go ahead and download us. Subscribe to us, and it'll come to your iPad or iPod or whatever podcast grabber machine. some people call it MP3 players. I call it an iPod, iPhone / grabbing machine, I guess.
not only are we on iTunes, but we became even more official with the debut of our official logo / avatar, courtesy of Milos Design. So shout out to our boy Milos. You can check out his work at www.miloshdesign.com. That includes some custom Bulls apparel.
Yeah, really good stuff. And also thanks to my boy Rocky, who hooked us up with the beat. There was talks of some freestyling going on, but we might save that for later, right?
I don't think that's happening. We're halfway there to becoming freestyle rappers because we're shouting out everybody.
Basically. All right. Episode number 4, we're going to be talking about three topics. We're going to be talking about, obviously, the NBA Finals, doing a little Dream Team discussion, 20-year anniversary of the Dream Team, and we'll be also covering some Bulls, odds and ends, some notes.
Some tidbits,
some rumors. So we will be back in about 30 seconds. Bull Show. Topic number 1 of the Bull Show, episode number 4, we're going to be talking about the NBA Finals. We just finished seeing the Miami Heat take out OKC to go up 2-1 on the series. Jay, what do you think about the series so far?
It's definitely looking good for Miami. I think that they are now in the driver's seat after taking pivotal Game 3. In recapping Game 3, you know, I was pretty impressed by how, especially in the first half, Miami didn't really settle for outside shots. They were taking the paint, especially LeBron. I mean, he is completely unstoppable when he gets down in the paint like that.
And in the first half, you definitely saw a different mentality with LeBron. He had some games early in the playoffs where the jump shot was falling. He had some games where the jump shot wasn't falling. There was no jump shots in that first half. He was going to the basket, either making a layup, getting fouled, or kicking out to open shooters. Unfortunately for him in the first half, those open shooters were not hitting those shots.
Well, with the exception of MVP candidate in the finals, Shane Battier.
Jeez. New school Larry Bird.
He's like, what, like 70% from three-point range?
It's ridiculous.
Well, the crazy thing about it, though, was that despite what looked like dominance, especially in terms of points in the paint, Miami still was only up by 1. So I guess that boded well for OKC.
And OKC was doing everything they needed to do in the game until, and I still basically stole this point from you, we were talking earlier, Kevin Durant got in a little bit more foul trouble.
Right, that definitely shifted the momentum. I think when KD got his fourth foul, they were up by 9 at that point. They were up by as many as 11 in the third quarter. But now with Durant having to be subbed out, you know, you had to put the ball in Westbrook's hands, and we know that he's not the best decision maker. He does play well, you know, with his athleticism and explosiveness, but he had a sequence in the third quarter where I think it went turnover, missed shot, then a charge call against him. And so you went from, you know, being up 9 where OKC was really in total control of the game to now having that lead dwindle to 1 or 2 points. And then further to that, you know, OKC just made a couple boneheaded plays.
Yeah, well, just talking about Russell Westbrook, a lot of stuff came out after Game 2. I know a lot of stuff is going to come out tonight and tomorrow about Russell Westbrook and his role with the team. He's getting hated on from all parts. I mean, as a point guard yourself who has an offensive game, what do you think about Russell Westbrook's overall role with this team? And do you assign some blame to him?
I think that it's tough to say. I think that Oklahoma City is only going to go as far as he takes them. And what I mean by that is really going to boil down to his decision-making. He's getting knocked a lot for taking too many shots. And I think that's fine. Oklahoma City needs him to be aggressive. I think the problem is not how many shots he takes, but when he takes them.
Definitely.
And you mentioned, and you can further elaborate on this, Westbrook is a type of point guard that doesn't make things easier for his team.
Definitely. One thing I'd like to see from Russell Westbrook is making the game easier for players. The model for that is Rajon Rondo, obviously. Getting shots for players. But you don't have to be Rajon Rondo. I think one thing that he could get better at is just getting guys shots. And you see so many times he comes down the lane, he's going to the basket, being aggressive, which is good. But he can really do a better job of getting guys open shots, swinging to the outside, and just making the game easier for everybody else.
Right. And so, you know, going back to game three and really, really where the game turned, in addition to, you know, that sequence of Westbrook mishaps, the boneheaded plays I was referring to were the two consecutive fouls on three-point shooters, which gave Miami basically 6 free points. And that came at a point where I felt like for the first time, Oklahoma City's bigs made their impact felt. You know, where Oklahoma City does have a distinct advantage is their size on the front line. However, Miami has been able to force them to play small ball. Well, finally, not only was OKC bigs controlling the paint, but they were rebounding, preventing LeBron from getting inside. Even Jeff Van Gundy pointed that out. It was really the first time in this series where Oklahoma City's bigs came to play. Of course, that was all trumped by the fouling three-point shooters, Kevin Durant's foul, and next thing you know, Miami's back in the lead. And led to the last 5 minutes of the fourth quarter.
And, you know, speaking of Kevin Durant, my whole theory on this series, I worried about OKC definitely after game two and certainly more so after game three. It looks as if they have really relied on huge Kevin Durant fourth quarter performances. And I'm not sure if that's really a sustainable model to win an NBA championship, or at least win four games versus Miami. You didn't see that today, and they just didn't have it in the fourth quarter. Right.
Having Kevin Durant kind of put his team on his back is obviously a beautiful thing when it works, when he's putting up 16 or more points like he did in games one and two. But I think it definitely backfired on them tonight. I think where Oklahoma City pretty much lost the game, you know, under that 3-4 minute span towards the end of the game, it really became too much isolation after isolation with Kevin Durant trying to go one-on-one. I don't think that's what's going to get it done. I think we saw that with Derrick Rose in last year's Eastern Conference Finals, where you're not going to beat LeBron one-on-one most of the time. I think what I would have liked to see is more of maybe Westbrook and Kevin Durant going with a two-man game, something that Miami actually does a lot, where they'll have Wade with the ball and LeBron will come set a pick for him and run a pick-and-roll off of that. What I'd like to have seen on Oklahoma City side of things would be the same exact setup, except Westbrook with the ball, have him come off a Durant screen, have him attack if it's open, or maybe pick and pop Durant at the top of the key, or, you know, have some shooters out in the corners, whether it be Derek Fisher, James Harden, Thabo Sefolosha, and look to create off that. Unfortunately, in game three for Oklahoma City, it really came down to Durant trying to create himself. And you combine that with LeBron getting into the paint, and it spelled defeat for the Thunder.
Now, before we move on to our next topic, I do want to talk a little bit about the coaching in this series. Obviously, both coaches have come under some struggle. So with OKC being down 2-1, do you assign that blame to Scotty Brooks? Do you think that he has or just hasn't made the adjustments that have got them in this 2-1 hole?
Yes, I have to put a decent amount of blame on Scotty Brooks, just because, you know, you on the flip side of things, you looked at the previous series with Miami and Boston, and when Miami wasn't able to execute down the stretch, everyone was calling for Spoelstra's head, because essentially late game execution will come down to the coaches and what they draw for the players. Whether it's a 1-4 low where you just clear out and have your best player go one on one, or you actually set up a play and have, you know, some spacing or set some screens, run some cuts. Scott Brooks needs to keep his team in check and design better plays at the end of the game, just like people were saying Spoelstra needed to do in that Boston-Miami series.
All right, so big picture, you predicted that OKC would take this series in seven. You still sticking with that prediction?
I'm definitely confident and remaining with that prediction, simply because all OKC needs to do to bring it back to their home court is to win one of the next two games.
topic number two, we're going to be talking about the Dream Team. We've had some great media over the last few weeks that have been celebrating the 20-year anniversary of the greatest team of all time.
And it really culminated with NBA TV's special that they aired over the week, which showed some never-before-seen footage of Dream Team scrimmages, practices. It was pretty incredible.
No, it was the best. If the NBA could basically just release those scrimmages, Malone versus Barkley, yep, Jordan versus Magic, David Robinson versus Patrick Ewing, they'd probably make $1 million off of it.
It was amazing because I had probably read 6 or 7 articles leading up to the documentary, and I thought there was no way that it could lead or live up to the hype. And I'm glad I was wrong because I was pretty blown away by the footage. I was pleasantly surprised by all the Bulls-related material showing up on the documentary.
No, it was some great stuff, and it was funny. I was watching the documentary with my girlfriend, and she's getting into basketball. She's not the biggest fan, but you know, she tries. You know, she watches some, you know, some games here or there.
Can't knock her effort.
Can't knock her effort. And the funny thing about her, not funny, but she's from Florida. And because she's from Florida, she doesn't share that same, like, scary, religious, cult-like love of Michael Jordan. And as things were going on, she just kept pointing out, like, man, Michael doesn't seem like the greatest of the guys. You know, the greatest guy with the whole beef with Magic. Not really beef, but definitely beef with Isaiah. Then the whole fighting for Alpha Dog with Magic and, you know, whole thing with Tony. I think she was taken aback.
It makes you think how well received Jordan would have been had he been playing during the Twitter, Facebook era. Because we know that Jordan wasn't exactly the nicest dude, but I think that fed into him being so competitive and being the player that he was. You know, I think what the documentary, at least for the first part, really shined a light on was just how not only great Jordan was, but how much differently wired he was compared to us.
Well, I mean, speaking of Jordan in the Twitter age, imagine Barkley in the Twitter age. I mean, that guy.
The dude was wilding out.
I mean, he was definitely the star of the documentary.
Not only was he the star of the documentary, but I think some people don't remember that he was actually the leading scorer of that Dream Team, which is crazy when you think about how stacked the lineup was. I mean, you think you'd immediately think that would be Jordan, maybe even, say, Karl Malone, the one of the leading scorers in league history. But it was really Barkley who was not only the MVP of the documentary, but the MVP of that team.
Nah, he was an animal on the court. He was an animal off the court. Just some of the lines he had were just absolutely amazing. And speaking of amazing, mm-hmm, from Split, Croatia, we got to see my boy Tony Kukoc make an appearance.
Yeah, I love the story that you told me before the podcast recording of how your girlfriend was so utterly confused by the fact that the revered Tony Kukoc you kept referring to in previous episodes of the Bulls show was none other than a left-handed white dude from Croatia, which is a bit odd, as we mentioned, being that you are an African-American male.
Well, listen, man, game recognized game, all right? And being a guy who could pass the ball, I can respect a guy like Tony Kukoc who passed the ball, even at a young age. I really just loved his game.
There was no recognition of game during the first time the U.S. played Croatia in that 92 Olympics, simply because Jordan and Pippen were chomping at the bit to really shut Tony down.
No, they went hard, and a lot of the documentary focused on that. I mean, it was great because, like you said before, there was so much great Bulls stuff in that documentary. Right. And it told kind of the story of Jerry Cross kind of lusting after Tony Kukoc, I guess is the right word. And Scotty and Michael just not really feeling respected about that.
And they displaced their frustration on Tony.
I guess they set out to just shut him down.
Which I think, you know, speaks highly of Kukoc and how he was able to bounce back from that. Because I would think that if you get embarrassed like that by arguably the two greatest defenders in the game, at least perimeter defenders, I don't know how well you bounce back from that. But he kind of just shrugged it off, and obviously the rest is history, where he ended up winning 3 titles with the Bulls with those players.
Well, it speaks kind of to his ability, speaks to Jordan and Pippen's ability, because when you think about somebody getting dominated in basketball, I mean, you think about, if I'm going to show you up, I'm going to drop 40 on you.
Right.
But the way Jordan and Pippen seemed to show up Tony Kukoc was just through sheer defense and not right. letting him touch the ball. I mean, that's the amazing part to me.
And really, quick segue here into kind of the next topic in this discussion. That is one of the main reasons why I believe the Dream Team would handle relatively easily the 2012 Olympic team.
Well, I think I made a comment that I'm soon...
Don't sell yourself short. You made the bold statement that the 2012 Olympic team would beat the Dream Team.
No, I didn't say they would beat the Dream Team. I said they'd be able to compete with the Dream Team.
I thought I heard beat, but is that, okay, I'll take you at that and say, in terms of competing, maybe they win 1-2 games out of 10. I think that'll be closer than some people think, but I think that the Dream Team is just on another level.
Well, my point was this, that a couple of guys on the Dream Team were a little bit out of their primes.
Right. They were in the twilight of the career, and Mitch is referring to Larry Bird and Magic Johnson, who, you're right, they you hear those names and you think, oh, one of the greatest players ever, top 10 history of the league, but obviously they weren't the same players on that team as they were in their careers.
Well, and then the cool thing about, I think, this team that we might potentially have is we have a lot of the great players of our game in their primes competing for America.
Right. You have Kobe, Durant, LeBron, Wade, Chris Paul, Melo, possibly I'd say Darren Williams, Kevin Love, Blake Griffin. So Chris Bosh, you have a stack line. I'm not saying that it won't be a talented team, but when you stack that up against the Dream Team, it won't be as close of a contest as you might imagine.
And you're right. I mean, 11 Hall of Famers on the Dream Team. Mm-hmm. I think if you added Rose and you added Howard to the list, maybe this team has about 7 or 8 guys that are probably projected for the Hall of Fame.
Right.
And, 2 or 3 guys that you don't really know about, Darren Williams, Blake Griffin.
And here's why I believe that the Dream Team could handle the Olympic team. We already talked about Jordan Pippen's defense. Along with that is just their mental capacity and how Jordan... I would never bet against Jordan in a game, especially at the prime of his career. But more importantly, in terms of physical inside presence, I don't think the Olympic team would be able to handle the Dream Team. Now, when you take a look at the Dream Team, you have Ewing, Barkley, Robinson, Malone. That's a stacked and huge front line. And the reason why I don't think the 2012 Olympic team can handle that is because there are legitimate concerns that this upcoming Olympic team, even though the roster isn't set, could potentially face a roadblock or have difficulty handling a Spanish team with a front line of the Gasol brothers and Serge Ibaka, who I don't know how he ended up on the Spanish team, but he's slated to be a part of that team. Anytime you have concerns over a 2012 Spanish team, how are you expected to compete against 4 Hall of Famers on the front line with Ewing, Barkley, Robinson, and
Malone? Yeah, no, you're right. And I think that probably ends the debate right there. This team, the 2012 Olympic team, is probably going to be a little bit soft inside. Not having Howard's going to kill them. I mean, they're talking about bringing up Anthony Davis, mm-hmm. which I think he's going to be a nice player, but doesn't have really the size that you would need to go up against a hypothetical matchup against 1992. The one thing I will say, though, is I do think that the world, obviously, is a lot better nowadays. You have teams who aren't even favorites to medal, like France, who are fielding entire NBA teams.
Right. You got Maurice Diaw, Tony Parker, Joakim Noah.
Yeah. And that's not even counting the Spanish team and the Argentinian team. So,
they're definitely, the gap in terms of talent is definitely not as wide as it was back in 1992. But let's not have, short memories on how dominant and just how legit the 1992 Dream Team was.
I mean, if you watch the documentaries, I mean, they're beating people by 20, 30 points. I mean, they won the gold medal game by 30.
The first game, they won by 77 points.
It's ridiculous.
So, I mean, yeah. it was a special documentary. Like I said, if you haven't seen it already, you're definitely doing a disservice to yourself, especially if you're a basketball fan. So make sure you check that out.
All right, man. We will be back with topic number 3. We'll be talking about some Bulls rumors and some notes. And we'll be back in about 1 minute.
Bulls show.
Back with topic number 3, we're going to be talking about some Bulls trade rumors.
We're going to actually talk about the current team.
We're going to talk about the current team.
I thought we were going to go the entire podcast, the entire episode, without even referring to this current team. Ooh,
we're 22 minutes in. I think we might have mentioned Derrick Rose once.
Yeah.
Whatever. It's still the Bulls show. We'll do better next time. We'll get into some Bulls stuff on top. But we're here now talking about the Bulls. Just want to talk a few kind of quick notes. If you check out a great website, what's it called? It's called...
So Great You Can't Remember the Name.
Yeah, So Great. I'm all bothered right now because my charger's not working, and I'm like holding it with my right hand.
And it is 1 a.m. on a Sunday.
And it is 1 a.m. on a Sunday.
This is dedication right here from the
dedication,
Bulls
show. Man. Hoopsite.com. Okay. They have a great rumor mill. You check that out. There's some good articles out there from Gar Forman. He's talking about how, you know, we talked about this guy before. He doesn't think that Nicolas Mirotic is going to come over from Spain till 2014 or 2015. So I know we devoted a lot of our podcast, a couple podcasts ago, to his potential arrival. It does not look like he'll be back over for a couple years.
Yeah, it's definitely a little disappointing because you looked at him as a potential option, especially if they were going to enlist Boozer to come in and fill that role and you know really be that stretch four to give more offensive firepower, especially with Rose out. So it looks like that option is out the window, at least for a couple more years.
Well, the good thing about that, though, is that he probably will come to the NBA a finished product. We know who he'll be. He won't have to develop here. He'll kind of be ready to, you know, hit the ground running like a young Tony Kukoc.
It'll be interesting to see if, because he is now stashed away for at least 2 more years, that whether the Bulls decide to use him as trade bait.
That's another question. That's another question too. There have been a ton of kind of rumors about the Bulls maybe trying to start things over, get young players or young picks for their older players. Speaking of their younger players, we've heard rumors from the front office that they definitely want to retain Omer Sheik, keep him in a Bulls uniform, and they're also possibly talking to Taj Gibson about extending his contract.
I like Taj's enthusiasm. There was a report that came out maybe a week or two ago about how he definitely wants to stay with the Bulls. I mean, you can't really comment on that because obviously he's going to say that and he's going to say all the right things, and we'll see what happens when, you know, agents meet and they actually get to the negotiating table. If the rumors are true and you know we do sign Omer, let's hope that he's been working on his free throw shooting.
Yeah. But, you know, although... You know, you expect Taj to sound positive about the situation. CJ, those guys, they haven't sounded positive about their situation. So
that's true.
Maybe there's something to be said about that. We also heard news that the Bulls are moving downtown. What do you think about that, Jay?
That's pretty exciting, especially for those Bulls fans that are located downtown. I think that, you know, the stalking and the camping out to catch a glimpse of your favorite Bulls players and hopefully... collect some autographs, as I've been known to do, will be much more accessible now that the Bulls will be downtown. The only thing is they haven't really disclosed the location. There's not really any timing of it, but it's definitely going to help the Bulls players because now they don't have to drive from Deerfield, which is about an hour away, even more brutal during traffic, down the city during game days. So, you know, they're going to have a lot more time to at least prepare for games.
Well, another great thing is I think that increases or shortens the time span that we're going to get Jimmy Butler on the podcast now that he's in the city, right?
You know? They're going to be much more accessible. It's just only a matter of time. Now that we're on iTunes and we're official, it's just a matter of time before we get credentialed and, you know, come with some media passes to the Berto Center downtown.
That's what I'm hoping for. That's what I'm in this thing for. Other than that, we heard some rumors that turned out to be big rumors and nothing more about Joakim Noah. There was some talk that he maybe moved to the Kings for Tyreke Evans and the fifth pick of the draft. That's not going to happen, but potentially.
You basically dropped that knowledge on me for the first time tonight, and I just thought that was a horrible, horrible idea when I first heard it. So I'm glad that it's nothing more than just a rumor.
Yeah. Tyreke Evans, another kind of player who really can't shoot, volume, score, probably looks better on paper than he does in real life. So with that kind of dead, a move that has been kind of substantiated, we don't have really strong sources, but Chad Ford...
We have sources?
Well, the internet's have sources. but Chad Ford definitely talked about this move, moving Luol Deng to possibly Golden State or Toronto. Golden State would be a little bit difficult because of salaries, but moving him to Toronto for the eighth pick and Jose Calderon. What do you think about that, Jay?
You know, I would absolutely hate for Luol Deng to leave our team because I think he's been such a glue guy. He's been, you know, part of that core with Rose and Noah, and you know, he's a consummate professional. He's a dude who has to check the toughest offensive player whenever we're playing another team. But honestly, after thinking about it a lot, I think it would be the right move to trade Luol Deng and his relatively bloated contract to collect some young pieces, especially in a deep draft like this. My reasoning is essentially because Luol Deng, we know what he is at this point.
Mm-hmm.
We know that he's not going to be a legit second option on the offensive end. I mean, he can knock down some shots, yes, but he's not an explosive swingman on the offensive end. Defensively, yes, we know that he can guard LeBron. We know that he can guard those really tough swingmen that are on teams. I don't even know what I'm saying at this point.
That's okay. It's late.
Yeah, it's late.
No, but I feel what you're saying. He's a guy who's known to be able to match up against strong perimeter players. He's got the great wingspan.
Right.
He's got the great, you know, not foot speed, but definitely got good quickness. He can guard somebody.
And what I'm saying is that he's reached the ceiling.
Okay.
I think he's reached the ceiling. And it was evident, especially last season, where he'd catch the ball on the perimeter and he'd dribble around. And maybe a lot of it could be attributed to his injured wrists, but he just was not as effective off the dribble on the offensive end. And it was a bit discouraging. So if we can trade him for someone that can really be that second option offensively, be that explosive swingman, I'd be all for it. And granted, I don't follow college basketball as in-depthly as some people. But from what I'm hearing about Harrison Barnes, that's a dude that could make an impact right away.
Well, we talked about it last week. The Bulls were talking to Harrison Barnes. Maybe they'll move up for him. Most of the mock drafts have him going before the seventh pick, but if you look at the history of the draft, the seventh and the eighth pick, you can get some good players there. I mean, Greg Monroe, 2010, Eric Gordon in 2008, Rudy Gay in 2006, Luol Deng in 2004. There are guys that you can get in that kind of range that could help.
What about former Bull great and friend of ours, but not really, Joe Alexander?
Joe Alexander.
Too soon to my friends out there.
Yeah. Shout out to Bordalus. But we'll see. Maybe I'm just a safe guy. I'm still in love with this team, man. And I'm still want to see this team get into the playoffs and see what they can do healthy. And especially seeing kind of seeing that the Miami Heat aren't the Monstars.
Yeah, aren't Space Jam.
Yeah, aren't a team that can be beaten. I'd love to see this team match up against them.
I just, watching the finals so far, at least games 1 and 3, I'll be honest. I don't think our team, even healthy, with a healthy D-Rose, could defeat either Oklahoma City or Miami in a seven-game series.
Really? Well, I think we would definitely match up better against, strangely enough, OKC. Just with our team defense, I think that we could try to slow them down offensively. I think the problem with Miami is that I think that their defense is actually overwhelming for us.
Right.
And their
right.
ability to kind of shut down a kind of one-dimensional type offense that we have mm-hmm. would make it hard against Miami. But if we were to get it around Miami, which is, I mean, certainly not impossible.
Right.
Maybe it's not likely, but it's not impossible. I do think that we kind of match up well against OKC. But, you know, we'll see. We'll see.
I think, you know, moving on here, another big piece of news, at least something to look forward to in next month, is that Summer League is starting.
Summer League is starting. I think that's – you always get a chance to check out Bulls that may make the team and Bulls that may not make the team.
Summer League, a.k.a. where James Johnson and John Lucas shine.
Hey, don't talk about my man James Johnson.
Hey, I enjoy James Johnson's tenure here.
The dynasty, the year and a half. But speaking of bad Chicago Bulls, before we close this thing out, why don't you give me your favorite bad Chicago Bull?
There are a lot to choose from.
Man, there were some lean years between Jordan and Rose.
I was going to ask, what? How do you define bad Chicago Bull? Does it have to be during that era, or can it be? Because I have a list here, and I don't know if a lot of them actually fall into that category, fall into that era of when those dark years.
Well, don't worry about the era. Let's just look at the list. Let's talk about the list.
Okay, okay. Here are some honorable mentions.
Okay.
I'm going to go with none other than 12th man of the 92 team, Bobby Hansen.
Bobby Hansen. Number 25?
I think he was 22.
22? Okay, 22. Okay.
He was Kyle Korver before there was Kyle Korver.
Yeah.
Except not as skilled.
Not good at basketball.
I feel like we need to take him off the list though, just because he did win a championship and he did key that game 6 come from behind victory against
Portland?
Against the Blazers.
All right, cool. Yeah.
What I like to call the Bobby Hansen game. I'm gonna also throw out Marcus Fizer.
Marcus Fizer.
Who may have been the Carlos Boozer before Carlos Boozer.
Pride of Iowa State.
He came in, from what I remember, as somewhat, not as a savior, but expected to be a force down low.
Now, was he the guy that had the question mark tattoo on his neck?
I'm not sure. I think that sounds familiar.
I'm pretty sure he had the question mark. I mean,
you're not talking about Eddie Robinson, are you?
No. I'm pretty sure it was Marcus Fizer. You're a coach for fifth graders.
What like, up, level up?
You're evaluating young talent.
Uh-huh.
You're an NBA coach.
Yep.
Do you take a player with a question mark on his neck tattoo?
I guess I take a question mark neck tattoo over full lips like Kenyon Martin.
That's true.
But, you know, I mean, just because he has a little ink on his body doesn't mean he can't play.
All right, let's go through the list. What else we got?
So you can't have a favorite bad Bull list without mentioning the reverse goatee himself, Drew Gooden.
Drew Gooden.
Who, if you remember, was it with the Bulls when he had that soul patch on the back of his head?
Oh, God, man. Drew Gooden was so bad. He was so bad. I mean, he, like, put up – he was almost like Carlos Boozer, too, because he put up, like, decent numbers.
Right.
But if you, like, watched him, like, you'd want to punch him on your TV. Like, something was going to get punched.
Right. There was a game, actually, earlier this year between the Bulls and Bucks, and – Drew Gooden was lighting up Carlos Boozer.
I mean,
I think he had like 20 and 10.
I was almost gonna make.
Man, maybe I should have given Drew Gooden the honor of favorite bad Bull because he's having you frustrated.
Right I now. Was gonna make an excuse for Carlos Boozer, but I figured like this was the one podcast I didn't, so I was gonna save that for 5, 6, 7, 8, and 2 affinity. So what else we got on the list?
So basically, I'm gonna give my personal favorite.
I only got one, so let's see if you hit my guy.
None other than the 12th man of really the dynasty, or at least the second stretch of three championships, Dickie Simpkins.
Well, I mean, Dickie Simpkins, first round pick.
Yep.
From
Providence, right?
From Providence. And literally, I have nothing else to say about Dickie Simpkins. That was
you,
it.
You need. I hope it's still up on YouTube. I remember a couple years ago, I YouTubed Dickie Simpkins just to see if he's had any highlights. And there's actually a decent highlight package of Takeesa Higgins in a Bulls jersey on really? YouTube. We might have to send that out on Twitter.
If they walked down the street, would you be able to tell the difference between Dickie Simpkins and Jason Caffey?
Oh, for sure. Okay. For sure. And the only reason why I mention that is because I'm pretty sure Dickie Simpkins still resides in the Chicagoland area, maybe in the northern suburbs, because I definitely crossed paths with Dickie Simpkins about 2, maybe 3 years ago at a Cheesecake Factory.
So before we get Tony Kukoc on the podcast.
Yeah.
And before we get Jimmy Butler on the podcast, yeah, should we be shooting for Dickie Simpkins?
I think it's in the realm of possibility.
All right.
I think it's definitely something that, you know, if we're going to set reasonable, attainable goals, Dickie Simpkins has to be high on that list.
All right. That sounds good.
All I know is that Dickie Simpkins, when he would get in garbage time, and he was part of that 95-96 Bulls team that was, you know, the greatest team ever. I mean, Jordan and Pippen would sit at the end of the bench with ice on their knees and essentially just laugh at Dickie Simpkins. I mean, that's how bad he was. They would just literally laugh at him and just mimic his inability to score a basket.
Dickie Simpkins, ladies and gentlemen.
There you go. My favorite bad
boy. All right, my favorite bad boy is a guy who's gotten a little bit of trouble from the University of Illinois. Mr. Frank Williams. Mr. Frank Williams. Only played for the Bulls for like 6 months.
I was about to say, did he get drafted by them or got traded?
Nah, he got drafted by the Knicks. Okay. I think he got cut by the Knicks.
Uh-huh.
And I think the Bulls picked him up. And I actually had a Facebook picture. I don't know if you ever remember this, but if you go to the United Center, they have the cutouts of all 12 players. And you can take pictures with them. And there was a picture of me on Facebook for a significant period of time. Of me with my arms around Frank Williams' cutout because I was so proud that my boy made the team.
Now, when you were at U of I, did you ever party with him? Like, did you cross paths?
Nah, I mean.
Were you jersey chasing?
I was. I think he was only there my freshman year. I'm pretty sure I didn't really do anything my freshman year.
Uh-huh.
So I didn't really cross paths with Frank Williams. But
What made him your favorite Bull?
I was such a big Illinois fan.
Mm-hmm.
And I had such an unrealistic expectation of his impact in the NBA. I mean, I assumed that he was going to be the new Allen Iverson, like with ball. It did not turn out that way. In fact, I think he just got arrested on felony drug charges.
So in a way, similar to Allen Iverson.
Listen, get rich or die trying. Frank Williams, everybody. All right, well, that is it for the Bulls show. Thank you guys so much for downloading the podcast. Once again, you can check us out on iTunes. Please hit subscribe, and while you're at it, leave a comment. You can also star us. I wouldn't do anything but leave us 5 stars, because why else would you give us anything else?
Yeah, even if you're hitting us up with 2 stars, just go ahead and round up.